Good morning and welcome to Claude Daily, your morning briefing on everything Claude and Anthropic. I'm Alex.
And I'm Sam. Happy Wednesday, June 3rd, 2026.
Big show today, Sam. Like, genuinely big. I was going through the feed this morning and there is a lot to unpack.
Yeah, and the lead story. When you see the numbers on this one, it's a little staggering. We're talking about a program that has grown by a factor of 4 in about 2 months.
We are. Project Glasswing is our main event this morning. Anthropic's cybersecurity initiative has expanded significantly, and the scale of what they're describing is worth sitting with.
200 organizations. That's not a pilot anymore.
We'll get into all of it. We've also got news on the integration front. Claude has landed directly inside Adobe's customer journey analytics platform, which is a big deal for anyone doing enterprise analytics work.
That one sounds like a quiet story, but I actually think it's quite significant for how organizations think about accessing data in automated workflows. We'll get into why.
And then we've got our Google News Roundup, which is loaded this morning. 32 items in the feed. We obviously can't do all 32, but we've pulled the highlights, and there are some genuinely interesting threads across security, regulation, enterprise adoption, healthcare, a lot going on.
It's one of those mornings where you wish the show was 2 hours.
We'll keep it moving. Let's get into it, starting with the big one. Project Glasswing. So for anyone who missed our coverage back in April, this is Anthropic's collaborative cybersecurity program built around a specialized model called Claude Mythos Preview. The core idea is to get vetted partners. We're talking critical infrastructure operators, major software vendors, security firms, to actively deploy this model to scan and protect their systems.
And when they launched it in early April, they had roughly 50 initial partners. Which at the time felt like a real statement of intent, right? 50 organizations using an AI model to scan critical infrastructure. That's not a small thing.
Not small at all. But now, and this is the announcement, they've expanded to approximately 150 new organizations joining the program.
Wait, 150 new? On top of the original 50?
That's right. So you're looking at roughly 200 organizations now in the Glasswing ecosystem, and they're spanning more than 15 countries.
That is, okay, let me do the math out loud. 50 to 200, that's a quadrupling, in about 8 weeks.
8 weeks, yeah.
And more than 15 countries. So this is genuinely global. This isn't American tech companies protecting American infrastructure. This is a worldwide deployment of a specialized AI security model in some of the most sensitive systems on Earth.
And I think the pace matters here as a signal. Because Glasswing is not open enrollment. You can't just apply and get access. These are vetted partners. Anthropic has done diligence on each of these organizations before granting access to Mythos Preview.
So they've vetted 150 new organizations in 8 weeks, on top of however much operational work is involved in actually onboarding and supporting those partners.
That's a significant operational scaling challenge, separate from the commercial story. Just the vetting process alone.
Yeah. And I think the speed of the expansion also tells you something about the demand that was sitting there waiting. Organizations were lining up for this.
And I think this is at least as likely, the early partners were getting results. Word was spreading, and that's what's driving the inbound.
Oh, absolutely. If the first 50 partners were running Mythos Preview and finding nothing, or finding things that turned out to be false positives at a high rate, you would not see this kind of appetite from new organizations. The program is growing because it's working.
Now, the critical infrastructure framing is worth unpacking for a moment because it covers an enormous amount of ground. We are potentially talking about power grids, water treatment systems, financial market infrastructure, healthcare networks, transportation systems, government administrative systems.
Supply chain software, telecommunications backbone systems.
The category of infrastructure where a successful cyber attack has real-world physical consequences rather than just financial ones. That's the domain.
And it's the domain where the stakes are highest, both for why you want a tool like this and for why you need to be incredibly careful about how you deploy it.
Let's talk about that tension because it's gotten real attention in the security research community this week. The question of what it means to give an AI model deep access to these kinds of systems.
Right. And I want to be clear. These concerns are legitimate and serious. You're essentially pointing a very capable AI model at power grid control software or at financial settlement infrastructure. The question of what happens if the model makes a mistake, or more worryingly, if the model itself or the deployment infrastructure is somehow compromised, that's not a hypothetical to wave away.
Anthropic would say, and does say, that the vetting process, the controlled access model, the specificity of what Mythos Preview is authorized to do, the fact that it's operating as a scanning and detection tool rather than an autonomous remediation tool, all of those things are designed to address that risk profile.
But we've designed safeguards is not the same as nothing can go wrong. And I've seen some pretty pointed commentary on Hacker News from security researchers, specifically about the lack of public transparency around what Mythos Preview is actually doing operationally.
The scanning is happening. The partnerships are growing. But we're largely taking Anthropic's word that the results are good and the risks are being managed. There's limited independent verification.
And I think for the broader security community to genuinely trust this program over the long term, there probably needs to be some form of audited reporting, some independent verification process, something that goes beyond partner count and geographic reach as the primary signal.
That's a fair critique. Though I'd imagine the response is that the nature of this work, scanning for vulnerabilities in critical infrastructure, creates legitimate reasons for keeping findings confidential. You don't want a public database of, here's what Glasswing found in the power grid.
No, you absolutely don't. But there's a middle ground between publish all the findings and publish nothing. Process transparency doesn't require publishing the results.
And then there's the government angle, which has been in several of the pieces circulating this week. Reports that governments, US, UK, Germany, Australia, based on the reporting, are actively evaluating Glasswing participation for government systems.
Which is a significant step up in terms of sensitivity. Private sector critical infrastructure is one category. Government systems, especially anything with defense-adjacent applications, regulatory infrastructure, intelligence-adjacent systems, that's a different level entirely.
And it raises real questions about whether the program's current governance structure is designed for that. There are clearance requirements, classification frameworks, legal authorities governing what can and can't be done to government systems. This is not the same compliance environment as commercial software.
Right. You cannot run an AI model with broad read access to classified government systems the same way you'd run it on an enterprise software package. The security architecture is completely different.
The reporting frames these as preliminary evaluations, exploratory conversations, not imminent deployments. But the fact that it's on the table at all is telling.
It means governments are at least open to asking the question, could this help us be more secure, rather than reflexively declining? And given how cautious governments tend to be with novel technology in sensitive contexts, that openness is meaningful.
There's also been an interesting academic paper circulating this week. A meta-analysis from security researchers looking at AI-assisted vulnerability discovery programs broadly, trying to put some rigor around what the actual detection rate differences look like compared to traditional tools.
Yeah, this one got a lot of traction. The headline finding was interesting. AI models are outperforming traditional automated tools, specifically on novel vulnerability types in complex multi-component systems, but they're generating more false positives on the simpler, well-understood vulnerability categories.
Which kind of makes intuitive sense. Human-written static analysis rules are excellent at catching known patterns because those rules were written specifically for those patterns. SQL injection, common memory safety issues, OWASP top 10 type stuff. Traditional tools have seen millions of examples.
But the emergent vulnerabilities, the ones that only appear when you understand how three or four different components interact, or the ones that exploit architectural assumptions rather than specific code patterns, that's where the AI capability really shows, because understanding systems-level interaction is something language models are surprisingly good at.
The false positive rate question has real operational implications, though. Security teams are already overwhelmed with alert volume. If you add an AI tool that floods them with false alarms on top of their existing alert load, you haven't helped. You've made the problem worse.
The paper apparently found that the programs working best are using AI for triage and prioritization rather than pure detection. The model helps analysts focus their attention on highest probability real vulnerabilities rather than trying to replace the human judgment on what's actually exploitable and what's actually dangerous.
Which connects back to Glasswing's design philosophy. It's a tool deployed by vetted partners who have human experts working with it. It's not an autonomous scanner making independent security decisions.
Right. Mythos Preview as a force multiplier for expert humans, not a replacement for expert humans. That's a very different, and I would argue, much more defensible deployment model.
All right. We'll keep watching this one very closely. Project Glasswing has gone from a pilot program to a global initiative in the span of 2 months, and the conversations it's generating about AI and critical infrastructure, about governance, about transparency, those conversations are going to be important for a long time.
200 organizations scanning critical infrastructure with an AI model. Yeah, that's a sentence that would have sounded like science fiction not that long ago.
So speaking of Claude embedding itself into places where actual work gets done every day, let's talk about the Adobe integration that landed this week.
Adobe Customer Journey Analytics. Okay, so for folks who maybe aren't in the enterprise data world, Customer Journey Analytics is a serious platform. This is what large organizations use to stitch together customer data from across all their channels. Your website, your mobile app, your call center, your email campaigns, your in-store point-of-sale data if you're a retailer. All of it stitched together into a unified picture of how customers actually move through the world.
And it's genuinely complex data. Multiple dimensions, multiple metrics, customer segments that can be incredibly granular.
And historically, getting useful answers from that platform required knowing the platform. You needed to understand its data model, how it structured queries, what the metrics actually mean in context, how to build segments correctly. There's a real learning curve, and it takes time even for experienced analysts.
And now Claude is directly integrated into it. So you can query all of that through natural language conversation. Ask in plain English and get answers.
Which sounds like a convenience feature when you describe it that way, but I actually think it's a more structural change than that. Because when you lower the barrier to querying complex data, you change who can ask questions. It's not just convenience. It's about who in an organization has the power to get answers.
Say more about that.
So the current workflow, a marketing manager wants to understand whether their new loyalty program is changing customer behavior across channels. They go to a data analyst. The analyst builds the query in Customer Journey Analytics, extracts the data, formats it, puts it in a slide deck, and the marketing manager looks at it 3 days later.
If they're lucky.
If they're lucky, it's 3 days. With a Claude integration, that marketing manager can just ask. Show me the conversion rate for customers who joined the loyalty program in the last 90 days versus the same period last year, broken down by acquisition channel, and get an answer in seconds.
And they can follow up. Now filter that to just mobile users. Now compare it to the previous loyalty program cohort.
Right. The conversation is iterative in a way that the traditional request and wait workflow just isn't. The ability to follow a thread of inquiry in real time changes how people think about data. You can actually explore. You're not just waiting for the answer to a question you locked in 3 days ago.
The integration also allows programmatic queries, creating and managing segments, pulling metric data systematically.
Yeah, and this is actually the part I find most interesting from a technical standpoint, because you can build this into an AI agent or an automated workflow. You could have an autonomous reporting agent that wakes up every Monday morning, pulls the right metrics from Customer Journey Analytics through the Claude connector, synthesizes them, and sends a briefing to the leadership team, without a human touching anything in the pipeline.
That's a pretty significant reduction in the operational overhead that currently surrounds analytics work.
Massively. And this is the pattern I expect we'll keep seeing with Claude connectors across the board. It's not just about making data more accessible to humans. It's about making data accessible to automated systems, to agents, to workflows that can act on that data without waiting for a human to be in the loop for every step.
Now, I want to give the flip side a moment. Because if you have AI agents automatically querying and potentially acting on customer analytics data, you need to think carefully about what they're doing with it.
Oh, the governance question is real. You want clear guardrails on what the agent can query, what it can export, what it can do with what it finds, whether it's operating within whatever data privacy frameworks the organization needs to comply with. GDPR, CCPA, sector-specific regulations.
And Customer Journey Analytics handles cross-channel customer behavioral data, which can get into genuinely sensitive territory depending on what's being tracked.
Right. Though I'd assume the integration respects whatever permissions and access controls are configured in the Adobe platform, Claude would be operating within the boundaries the organization sets up. But those boundaries need to be set up thoughtfully.
And this is actually an argument for doing deep, careful integrations rather than shallow ones. A shallow Claude can kind of access some data integration creates ambiguity about what's happening. A deep, well-documented integration makes the permissions and boundaries explicit.
Which is presumably what Anthropic is trying to do with the connector program. Make the integrations deep enough to be genuinely useful and explicit enough to be trustworthy.
The Adobe angle is also significant from a market position standpoint. This is not a niche tool. Adobe Customer Journey Analytics has serious penetration in large enterprise. Major retailers, financial services companies, healthcare organizations, media companies.
When Claude lands in Customer Journey Analytics, it's not landing somewhere on the periphery. It's landing in a platform that thousands of large organizations already rely on for their core analytics work. Those analysts and developers don't need to change anything about their existing workflow. Claude is just there now.
And it fits a pattern we've talked about on this show. Anthropic going deep on specific platforms rather than trying to be a thin generic layer on top of everything.
A deep integration where Claude actually understands the structure of customer journey analytics, knows what dimensions and metrics mean in that specific context, can reason about the data properly. That's enormously more valuable than a generic AI that can kind of sort of talk to an API.
All right, big news on the connectors front. The Adobe Customer Journey Analytics integration is live now. Real time, the way analysts should be able to work.
As someone who has personally sat in way too many status meetings waiting for someone to pull a number from a dashboard, I will say, this is the kind of integration that makes the future feel like it actually arrived.
I believe you.
You just ask, and you get an answer, and then you ask another question. That's it. That's how it should work.
All right, let's get into the Google News Roundup. A lot to cover, so we'll move through these. Some quick hits, some that deserve more depth.
Yeah, and there are a few I really want to dig into. The Glasswing story has stirred up a lot of reaction in the broader industry, and I think some of that reaction is worth engaging with seriously.
It has. There's been a wave of coverage this week about what Glasswing's expansion means for how the security industry thinks about AI-assisted vulnerability scanning. And the reactions are, let's say, mixed.
Mixed is diplomatic. You've got security professionals who have been waiting for tools like this, who see AI-powered scanning as essentially the only viable path forward given the scale and sophistication of modern threats. And then you've got a vocal contingent with serious concerns about what it means to have AI models with deep access to critical infrastructure.
And that second group is not just reflexively skeptical. There are legitimate questions there that deserve serious engagement. Historically, security tools themselves have been attack vectors. If you're running a scanning tool across critical infrastructure and that scanning tool has a vulnerability, you've created a new attack surface.
Right. The security tool as a target problem. And a highly capable AI model with broad red access to infrastructure systems is a pretty attractive target if you're a sophisticated adversary.
The counterargument from the program's defenders is that this is exactly the kind of risk that the vetting and controlled access model is designed to address. You're not just downloading a scanning tool and running it. You're operating within a governed program with specific technical constraints on what the model can do.
Which is more reassuring than a purely commercial product, I'll grant that. But governance on Anthropic's end doesn't fully address what happens at the partner level. The weak link in a program spanning 200 organizations across 15 countries is probably not Anthropic's own infrastructure.
That's well said. The security of a networked program is only as strong as the least secure participant.
And you have 150 new organizations that joined in the last 8 weeks. That's a lot of new participants, some of whom may have varying levels of security maturity.
Now, there's also been reporting this week on the government evaluation angle, and specifically, there was an interesting piece about how some U.S. government agencies are framing the question. Not should we use this, but can we use this within our existing legal and regulatory framework?
Which is actually a more sophisticated question, because the legal authority for what AI can do to government systems, what access is permissible, what oversight is required, who has accountability for what the model finds and what happens next, those are genuinely complex legal questions.
And there are things like the Federal Information Security Management Act, authorization to operate frameworks, supply chain security requirements. A government deployment of Glasswing would have to navigate a significant compliance landscape.
Not impossible. People do navigate that landscape, but it takes time and it requires Anthropic to engage deeply with those requirements, which is a different kind of work than signing up 150 commercial partners.
There's also been some interesting debate in the defense and national security press about the geopolitical dimension of having an American AI company running a global critical infrastructure security program, which is a conversation I think is going to get louder.
Yeah, if you're a European government and you're considering joining Glasswing, you're essentially inviting an American company to have visibility into vulnerabilities in your critical infrastructure. There are sovereignty questions there.
Questions that presumably have to be addressed in whatever agreements govern the program's operation in those jurisdictions.
And it goes the other way, too. There are American national security voices who are asking whether a program spanning 15-plus countries creates intelligence-sharing obligations or risks. What happens to information about vulnerabilities found in foreign infrastructure by a U.S. company's model?
These are hard questions, and I don't think Glasswing has publicly answered all of them, which is perhaps part of why we're seeing so much coverage and debate alongside the growth announcements.
The program is growing faster than the public conversation about its governance is keeping pace, which might be inevitable at this speed, but it's worth noting.
All right, let's pivot to something a bit different in the feed. The broader enterprise AI landscape, because the Adobe integration doesn't exist in a vacuum. There has been a lot of coverage this week about what I'd characterize as the analytics AI arms race.
Yeah, and it is genuinely competitive. You've got Salesforce going hard on Agentforce with natural language data access across their CRM and analytics products. You've got Microsoft Copilot pushing aggressively on the business intelligence side, trying to make Power BI feel like a conversation. Google's Gemini team has been making loud noise about the data analytics use case with BigQuery integration.
Into that landscape, the Claude landing in Adobe Customer Journey Analytics is a meaningful stake in the ground. Because Adobe's core strength is marketing analytics and customer journey data, which is territory that Salesforce and Microsoft are also fighting over.
So this is Claude claiming space in an actively contested domain, and I think the differentiator Anthropic would point to is the depth of the integration and the quality of the reasoning. Not just our AI can talk to your data, but our AI actually understands what the data means and can reason about it usefully.
There was an interesting piece in a TechTrade publication this week that framed Anthropic's overall strategy as a deliberate bet on integrations over destination. The argument being that Anthropic has decided Claude's biggest value accrues when it's a layer inside tools people already use, rather than as a standalone destination requiring behavioral change.
I think that framing is largely right, but I'd push back on the over. It's not either or. The API is still a major business. Enterprise deployments are still a thing, but the connectors program is being prioritized because that's where the workflow friction is lowest. People will not leave their existing tools to go use an AI. Full stop.
The enterprise reality is that changing the tool someone uses for their daily work is incredibly hard. The switching costs are high. Training, habit change, integration with other tools, people resist it.
But if the AI is already there in the tool they're already using, if they can just start asking questions in customer journey analytics rather than going somewhere new, the adoption path is frictionless.
Whoever figures out how to be the AI that's everywhere your workflows already happen wins something very significant.
Very significant.
Let's talk about the regulatory front because there was significant movement this week. The European Union's AI Act implementation timeline is, once again, a topic of active debate. Reports this week that the enforcement mechanisms for high-risk AI systems and AI security scanning tools applied to critical infrastructure would almost certainly fall into the high-risk category are facing pushback from industry groups claiming the compliance requirements are not technically feasible on the given timelines.
This is a slow-motion story we've been watching for a while. The EU sets ambitious timelines. Industry says those timelines are unrealistic. Everyone negotiates. But there's a new wrinkle this week.
Yeah. The pushback is now coming not just from tech companies, but from some of the critical infrastructure operators themselves. And their argument is interesting. They're saying that if the compliance requirements make it too expensive or technically difficult to deploy AI security tools, they'll end up less secure than if they weren't regulated.
The regulation is creating a security risk argument, which is a genuine inversion of the usual framing.
And it's an argument that's going to get more traction as programs like Glasswing demonstrate concrete results. If you have evidence that AI scanning found and helped remediate serious vulnerabilities in infrastructure serving tens of millions of people, the argument for not using it becomes harder to sustain.
The regulatory argument shifts when the cost-benefit analysis becomes really concrete and visible. Here's what happens when we use it. Here's what might have happened if we hadn't. That's a different conversation than theoretical risk models.
There was also an interesting angle on the U.S. regulatory side. There have been discussions in Washington this week around whether there should be specific frameworks governing AI deployment and critical infrastructure, not under the AI Act, obviously, but in domestic policy. And the Glasswing program has apparently come up explicitly in some of those conversations.
As a model to potentially formalize, or as a target for oversight?
Both, apparently, depending on who you're talking to. Some policymakers see it as an example of responsible industry self-governance that might not need heavy-handed regulation. Others see it as exactly the kind of thing that needs a regulatory framework because it's currently operating without one.
The argument for the self-governance view being, Anthropic has done more to design safeguards into this than any regulator would require, because it's in their commercial and reputational interest to do so.
And the counterargument being, self-governance is fine until something goes wrong, and when it goes wrong at the scale of critical infrastructure, it goes very badly wrong.
Both of those arguments are reasonable. The question is which failure mode you're more worried about.
There was also a significant piece this week on the talent and funding dynamics at frontier AI companies, which I want to touch on because it provides context for how Anthropic is positioned.
The funding environment continues to be frothy, doesn't quite cover it.
The reporting indicates Anthropic has been in conversations about a significant new funding round. Specific numbers and lead investors are not confirmed, but the context matters. These conversations are apparently happening at a moment when Anthropic has demonstrated real commercial traction. Enterprise deals that are paying, a security program that's growing fast, a connector ecosystem generating expanded platform usage.
This is not pre-revenue speculation. There's an actual business here, and the revenue trajectory appears to be tracking in the direction investors want to see.
Which changes the fundraising conversation meaningfully. When you're sitting across from investors with demonstrated enterprise revenue, a growing partner ecosystem with international reach, and a flagship security program with government interest.
That's a very different pitch than we're training a model we hope will be commercially relevant in a few years.
And there's been interesting analysis this week about Anthropic's competitive positioning versus OpenAI and Google specifically. The argument coming up repeatedly is that Anthropic has carved out something meaningful in the trust-sensitive enterprise segment. Government, healthcare, critical infrastructure, financial services.
The safety-first brand positioning actually converts into sales in segments where safety genuinely matters. Where the cost of an AI model behaving badly isn't just embarrassing, it's catastrophic. Those sectors gravitate toward Anthropic's approach.
It's a situation where what seemed like it might slow Anthropic down, all the constitutional AI work, all the responsible scaling policy, all the emphasis on alignment research, has turned into a commercial differentiator in exactly the markets that generate the most durable enterprise revenue.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. The bet that safety and commercial success are complementary rather than in tension, that bet appears to be paying off.
Not weird, strategic. Whether that was the original thesis or happy accident.
Probably some of both.
On the talent side, there's been a lot of coverage of AI compensation generally, and there are specific Anthropic angles worth noting. Reports that Anthropic has been particularly aggressive in retaining alignment and safety researchers specifically.
Which makes sense, given that safety research is literally their core value proposition both commercially and from a mission standpoint. If your key differentiator is how seriously you take safety, losing your safety researchers to competitors is an existential problem.
The reactions in the safety research community are mixed. Some people are glad that safety research is being compensated at the level of capabilities research, which historically it wasn't. Alignment research had a real compensation gap relative to the people building the models.
But there's a concern from some in the community that heavy compensation from commercial companies creates its own kind of capture. You start optimizing for the kind of safety that doesn't slow down the commercial roadmap.
That tension is real, and there's no easy answer. But it's a better problem than nobody is doing safety research because the money is elsewhere.
Better problem. Still a problem.
Still a problem. Let me hit a few more items from the feed. There's been interesting coverage of Claude in the legal sector that's been circulating widely this week, specifically around contract analysis and due diligence at major law firms.
Legal has been one of those sectors where AI adoption has been simultaneously faster than people expected, and more contentious than people expected.
Faster because the use cases are so obvious and the value is so concrete. Document review, contract analysis, legal research across large case libraries, deposition preparation, these are labor-intensive, high-value tasks where even modest AI assistance creates significant efficiency gains.
More contentious because lawyers have very high accuracy bars and a lot of professional liability exposure. An AI model that hallucinates a case citation, or worse, a statute, can land you in front of a bar association. The professional risk is real.
The piece specifically highlights how firms are deploying Claude through tightly scoped implementations, very specific practice areas, very specific task types, with human review requirements built into the workflow. Not Claude does legal work, But Claude does this specific part of this specific type of work within this specific guardrail structure.
Mergers and acquisitions due diligence is actually interesting as an example, because you're reviewing hundreds or thousands of contracts, and a significant portion of the work is pattern recognition. Does this contract have a change of control clause? Does it have a most favored nation provision? Does it have an auto-renewal term? AI is genuinely excellent at that, and the consequence of an individual miss is lower.
Versus crafting legal arguments, advising on litigation strategy, counseling on regulatory compliance, where the judgment required is much more complex and contextual, and where the cost of a mistake is much higher.
The legal sector has actually become a pretty sophisticated case study in how to deploy AI in a regulated professional context. Use it where the task is well-defined and the error cost is manageable. Be very careful where the judgment is irreducibly complex.
And the interesting thing about the piece this week is that it's not describing early experiments anymore. It's describing adopted workflows at major firms. This has moved from, "Are we exploring this?" to, "This is how we do certain things now."
That normalization happens faster than people expect, and then people forget it was ever any other way.
Let me get to the healthcare story, because this one I think is genuinely important. There's been reporting this week on a deployment of Claude in a large hospital network, multiple facilities, being used as an administrative and clinical documentation assistant for medical staff.
And the explicit framing is not clinical decision support, very deliberately not that.
Right. This is specifically about the documentation burden, which for anyone who's spent time around healthcare, clinicians spend a staggering amount of their working hours on administrative documentation. Some studies put it at close to half their time. Documentation rather than patient care.
Which is a workforce crisis on top of the workforce crisis the healthcare system already has. You've got a shortage of physicians and nurses, and a significant fraction of those physicians and nurses' time is being consumed by paperwork.
The deployment is focused on things like generating clinical notes from recorded patient encounters, handling prior authorization documentation, summarizing patient history for care team handoffs, administrative tasks, but critically important ones.
And the preliminary numbers being reported are significant. Clinicians getting back something in the range of an hour or more per shift from reduced documentation burden.
If that holds up at scale, the math is pretty striking. An extra hour per shift times the number of clinicians in a large health system times how many days they work. That's a very large amount of additional patient care capacity that essentially didn't exist before.
And it's care capacity that doesn't require hiring more clinicians, which you often can't do because of supply constraints. You're making better use of the clinical workforce you have.
The caveats are serious. Clinical documentation has to be accurate. These records have direct patient safety implications. They have legal implications. They have regulatory requirements. This is not a context where you can tolerate a high error rate.
Right. The deployment requires careful tuning, rigorous human review workflows, and probably ongoing monitoring for exactly the kinds of errors that matter most in clinical contexts. It's not a set-and-forget implementation.
But if the early results are promising enough that they're looking at expansion, and the reporting suggests that's the case, this could be one of those deployments where the real-world impact is genuinely significant, not just commercially, but in terms of actual health outcomes.
More doctor-patient time? Less time filling out forms? That's a real thing with real consequences for real patients.
Let me grab a couple more from the feed before we close out. There's been a lot of conversation this week about the context window question. Now that very long context windows are common, whether the industry was solving the right problem or whether there are more fundamental limitations that a bigger window doesn't address.
This debate has been simmering for a while, and a few op-eds this week pushed it back into the conversation.
The core argument being, a long context window lets you stuff more information in, but it doesn't necessarily mean the model is reasoning effectively over all of that information. There's a gap between can process a million tokens and actually makes good use of everything in that million tokens.
The lost in the middle problem, where performance degrades for information that appears in the middle of a very long context versus information at the beginning or end, that's been documented. And the counter argument is that newer model generations have meaningfully addressed this, and that the real world value of long context for use cases like analyzing entire code bases or large legal document sets is genuinely high, even with imperfect performance.
I think both things can be true simultaneously. Long context is genuinely useful for real tasks that people care about. The performance isn't perfectly uniform across the context. Both.
Right. Here are the known characteristics and what to design around, rather than long context is either magic or useless.
There was also a note that Anthropic updated some evaluation documentation for their current model lineup, specifically adding more detail around how they approach agentic contexts, what the model's behavior looks like when it's taking sequences of real-world actions rather than just responding to a single query.
That kind of documentation update might sound procedural, but it's actually significant for people building in those spaces. Understanding the known limitations and behavioral characteristics of the model you're deploying as an agent, where it's reliable, where it needs more oversight, that's foundational for building safe agentic systems.
Given how much of today's show has been about agentic contexts, the Adobe workflow automation angle, the Glasswing deployments, understanding the model's properties in those settings matters enormously.
Yeah, worth a read if you're building agents.
And then there's been some lighter but genuinely interesting coverage on the creative applications side. Several independent creators have been publishing work this week on using Claude for long-form narrative projects, specifically the challenge of maintaining consistency in complex fictional worlds over very extended writing projects.
World-building at scale is actually a hard problem even for experienced authors. Keeping track of character histories, world rules, timeline consistency, the logic of fictional systems across hundreds of thousands of words of context, that's a real cognitive load.
And some writers are developing workflows with Claude that work pretty well for this. Not as a replacement for creative judgment, but as a continuity and consistency checking layer. Wait, does this character know this thing at this point in the story? Does this event contradict what we established 300 pages ago?
The model as a kind of memory and consistency system for a creative project. That's actually a really good fit with what language models are good at, holding a lot of context and being queryable about it.
And I think the story of AI and creative work continues to be more nuanced than either AI will replace writers or AI can't do anything creative worth having. The reality is messier and more interesting than either extreme.
Collaborative. Writers who think about it as a collaboration, who understand both what the tool can contribute and where the human judgment is irreplaceable, seem to be getting the most out of it.
As usual, the boring answer turns out to be the right one.
The boring answer is always right. I hate it.
Ha!
One thing I want to flag quickly from the broader news feed, there's been some coverage of the education sector that I think is worth naming, even if we can't spend a lot of time on it.
The graduate research workflow question.
Yeah. There's a piece from a major research university looking at how graduate students are using AI assistants for literature reviews, which on the face of it seems like a perfect use case. Surveying a large body of work and synthesizing it? That's exactly what AI is good at.
But the concern from faculty is that the process of doing a literature review, of really sitting with a field, of understanding its intellectual history, of figuring out what questions have been asked and which ones are still open, that process is itself a form of training a researcher. It's not just about producing the review.
The learning to synthesize is the point, not just the synthesis argument.
And that's genuinely hard to resolve. If your goal is a high-quality literature review, the AI-assisted version might be better. If your goal is training a scholar who can think independently about a field, the process might matter as much as the output.
And those are normative questions about what education is, for that educators have been debating forever. AI just made them urgent and concrete in a way they weren't before.
We're not solving it this morning.
We are definitely not solving it this morning. But it's a conversation that's going to matter more and more.
All right, that's going to do it for Claude Daily this Wednesday morning, June 3rd, 2026. What a show today.
Genuinely packed. I feel like we covered a lot of ground, and there was still stuff I wanted to get to.
The top line this morning, Project Glasswing has gone from 50 partners to roughly 200 organizations across 15-plus countries in about 8 weeks. That is the story of the day, and probably of the month.
And the questions it raises about AI and critical infrastructure. About governance and transparency, about what responsible deployment looks like at that scale, those conversations are just getting started.
The Adobe Customer Journey Analytics integration is the kind of story that seems smaller by comparison, but probably matters more day-to-day for more people. Natural language access to complex analytics data, built into a platform that large organizations are already using, that changes workflows in a very concrete way.
Yeah, the Glasswing story is dramatic and consequential. The Adobe story is quiet and may turn out to be equally consequential in aggregate. Those are both worth watching.
If you want to go deeper on either of today's main stories, Project Glasswing has dedicated coverage on Anthropic's news page, and the Adobe Customer Journey Analytics Connector documentation is available through Anthropic's Connectors documentation. Both are worth a read if you're in those spaces professionally.
And if you've got thoughts on any of today's topics, the AI security debate, the enterprise analytics integration picture, the healthcare deployment story, the regulatory question, we genuinely love hearing from listeners. Find the show wherever you found it and send us your thoughts.
We'll be back tomorrow with more Claude and Anthropic news. There is, as ever, no shortage of things happening.
No shortage whatsoever. I'll be up early going through the feed.
I know you will. I'm Alex.
I'm Sam. Have a great Wednesday, everyone. Go do something interesting.
See you tomorrow.